And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines in simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning to me. Not so much about you, I guess.
As I stumble my way into the studio, this is ridiculous. I'll get there. Just give me a second.
Well, good morning, Lena. I hope you're doing okay.
Good morning and happy Friday, everyone. Let's get started. We have many headlines to cover this morning. Of course, beginning with the med school admissions hike. The crisis around it has been ongoing for weeks now. We take a look at the latest, our first keyword of the day.
Med crisis continues.
So medical school professors are planning to reduce their work hours to the legal limit of 52 hours a week due to heavy workloads caused by striking trainee doctors. Now, they're the ones that were left in the front lines since the trainee doctors walked out. Now, what's the latest on this front?
Well, of course, that's part of the reason why they're deciding on kind of limiting their work hours to 52 hours a week. It's part of efforts, if you will, to try and protest or try and convince the government to engage a dialogue with these striking trainee doctors or reverse its decision, but that looks unlikely at the moment. Now, the move to work the hours of the legal 52 hours a week, it starts next Monday, and they are citing that overwork could endanger patients' health. And they're also planning to minimize outpatient services from April 1st to focus more on treating serious and emergency patients. Now, this, of course, may exacerbate the medical crisis, as professors have also announced they will submit resignations starting next Monday as well. Now, there are growing concerns about an increased medical vacuum, of course, because of this. However, a professors' association believes that care for emergency and critical patients will continue, suggesting that outpatient care for non-critical cases could be redirected to secondary hospitals. Professors have also criticized the government's recent announcement on how the new medical school spots for 2025 will be distributed across universities. They say it's not realistic and may even spark backlash from med schools, basically saying that they don't really have to do anything in terms of any opposition, and that if they do implement it, then it'll probably reverse itself, because it's not the reality of what's on the ground. Now, they also reiterated calls for the government to initiate dialogue again with striking residents and doctors to resolve the situation. Furthermore, the association plans to submit a request for clarification to the Seoul Administrative Court regarding potential procedural flaws in the government's announcement of increased admissions. And the association will meet today, in fact, to reassess the situation once more and review their plans for submitting resignation letters. So we'll have to see if they actually do make a final decision on it and whether there will be en masse resignations on Monday.
All right, we'll wait and see. Let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Elderly housing.
So President Yoon has announced measures to support the elderly population, particularly including increasing housing supply and enhancing nursing care. Now, despite our advancement, South Korea is also known for having the highest elderly poverty rate, and we must address it. Tell us the details.
Right. So this came in another government public debate. This time it was held at the headquarters of the Health Insurance Review and Assessment Service in Wonju. Yoon said the government plans to boost the number of so-called silver towns, which are basically private residential complexes for older people, usually associated or usually known for being quite expensive. So it's not available to everyone. Now, it will also introduce the silver town pre-sales as well, which were abolished in 2015 after some designated land was illegally sold to individuals. In the meantime, they were usually up for rent rather than being available for sale. Now, qualifications to live in silver towns will be eased as well to allow anyone 60 or above to reside in such facilities. Now, additionally, the annual supply of public rental housing units for older people will be tripled from 1,000 to 3,000. Furthermore, the government plans to increase day centres and senior dining facilities as well across the nation so that seniors can have regular nutritious meals. Yoon also emphasised the importance of implementing a nursing care system that allows more doctors and nurses to provide treatment at home. The government plans to increase the number of medical facilities eligible for these long-term at-home treatments from 95 to 250. And the government will also begin subsidizing nursing care costs for those hospitalized at care facilities starting next month. He also announced plans to introduce new care facilities known as unit care. Now, these will feature community centers with shared spaces and individual rooms, allowing seniors to socialize and engage in a lot of activities. He added that the government will also help seniors adapt to the increasingly digitalized society by offering training on using smartphones and kiosk machines, so that they are not held back by, you know, technology, basically.
We might all need those classes eventually, right?
And now, I think I need a few.
I mean, we're talking about smartphones and kiosks now. In the future, it'll be AI-infused everything. And I bet we might need a little bit of help in that department.
Yeah, I mean, technology advances very quickly. But of course, people's brains, I think, don't really evolve that much speedily with it as well. So, of course, yes, it is a good program to have for the elderly population.
All right, let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Election registration.
So the registration for candidates in the general election will close today. How many have registered so far?
Yeah, so we mentioned yesterday that it had opened. So the first day is complete. And after the first day, 607 candidates registered for 254 districts, showing a competition rate of 2.39 to 1. That is a decrease, actually, from the previous elections, 4.4 to 1. Now, the Democratic Party registered 234 candidates and the People Power Party registered 230. Mukpur in South Chola province had the highest competition rate with 6 candidates vying for the spot. Now, 14 parties have applied to register proportional representation candidates. The allocation of numbers for parties and candidates will be determined by the number of seats each party holds in the National Assembly, followed by parties without seats, and then independent candidates, of course, based on the final registration count by the end of the of today. For those who don't know what that number is, it's basically the number allocated to each candidate. If you see the banners, they'll have a large number imprinted along with them as well. And that, of course, will be on the ballot, of course. And there's actually a fierce competition to try and get certain numbers because, you know, they're sometimes associated with luck sometimes as well. And sometimes some numbers prove a little bit more, have a little bit of a better chance of being elected, I guess. I don't know if that's superstition or not.
Or simple stats. Simplified.
That's right. But it is a much coveted numbers nonetheless. Now, the People Power Party plans to send 5 current district representatives to its satellite party in order to secure the number 4 spot on the ballot for the proportional representation. Meanwhile, you can check the list of registered candidates, including their assets and military service records, criminal history, education, tax payments on the National Election Commission's website until election day. So if you're looking towards a candidate and want to get more details and see if he or she is worth your vote, then you can check on the website. Now, starting April 1st as well, you can also look up the election bulletins submitted by parties and candidates online, which will include their policies and campaign pledges as well.
You'll cover some of it in detail, won't you, come next week?
I certainly will. A lot to sift through. I don't know. I'm going to have to summarize it as much as possible. But yes, certainly will be. It will be a busy week, certainly.
But those who are, of course, able to vote in South Korea, be sure to check out that website so you can take a look at perhaps the most important part of the discussion, policies and campaign promises. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
GTX Fair.
So the fair between GTXA Suseo and Dongtan, which will start operating on the 30th of this month, has been confirmed. Can you run us through details like pricing and what it aims to do?
Right, so the basic fare for the GTXA is set at 3,200 won. If you travel more than 10 kilometers, that's an extra charge of 251 for every 5 kilometers you go over. This means the fare from Suseo to Dongtan is 4,451. However, You can, of course, pay less by using various discount programs and transfer discounts as well. So starting in May, if you use the K-Pass, which gives you money back if you use public transport a lot, you can save money on the GTX A as well. Additional discounts are available for children, teens, seniors, disabled individuals, and veterans. On weekends, the fare drops by 10%, and up to 3 kids under 6 can ride free with an adult. Now, even though the GTX is a fast train, which is usually associated as being separate from the public transport here in Seoul, you don't actually have to pay extra to switch to a bus or subway, which makes, of course, transferring smoother. For example, if you go from Tongtan to Susan and then take the subway to Irwan Station, for example, you only pay for the GTX trip, so any further transfers you have will be free. Now, the trains will run every day from 5:30 a.m. until 1 a.m. the next day, with trains coming about every 17 minutes during busy morning hours. The trip between Susa and Dongtan will take about 20 minutes, so it's, of course, much faster than before. You can find out the train times and other details online through mobile apps or at the stations, of course. Now, overall, the government says users of the GTX A will generally save much more money than the Super Rapid Train, or SRT, that starts at Susa Station. So, yeah, so good news if you're commuting in and out of the capital from outside of the capital, especially along that Tongtan and Susa route. So there you have it.
All very much in line with efforts to usher in this new era of 30-minute commute from the greater metropolitan area into the capital city. Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
Gaza ceasefire.
So the United States will reportedly submit a draft resolution to the UN Security Council demanding an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip conflict. Now, this move diverges from its previous stance of supporting Israel's military operations. What's the latest? What is left to, of course, this shift?
Right. So Secretary of State Antony Blinken actually announced the submission during an interview with Saudi media Al Hadath, now linking the ceasefire demand to the release of hostages held by Hamas. Reuters reports that the draft resolution calls for an immediate and sustained ceasefire that would last roughly 6 weeks and protect civilians and allow for the delivery of humanitarian assistance. The resolution unequivocally supports ongoing international diplomatic efforts to secure such a ceasefire in connection with the release of all remaining hostages. The diplomatic efforts is referring to is the ongoing talks brokered by the United States, Egypt, and Qatar. This development comes amid disagreements between the U.S. and Israel over the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. U.S. President Joe Biden has actually criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for not readily agreeing to U.S. requests for civilian protection. And the resolution is seen as kind of a more forceful push by the Biden administration towards Israel. The U.S. has vetoed before UNSC resolutions calling for a ceasefire 3 times, actually, since the conflict began in October last year. So this is a bit of an about turn. For the resolution to pass, it needs at least 9 votes in favor and no vetoes from the 5 permanent members. The vote is slated for Friday morning, New York time.
Thank you so much, Adam, for a week's worth of coverage. Do you have any special plans over the weekend? No.
Not that I can think of right now, but I don't know if any will come about.
Were you not expecting that?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that question. I was just wrapping my head if there was anything.
But so nothing funny. Planned so far. It would be funny if we're like, shuffle, shuffle. That's not on our script.
I'm sure something will come up.
Thanks, Adam. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
You too. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you next week.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.